Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! I see flamingos in a fruit fight!
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 213th episode of Dave's Gone By. Here on this Sunday night, this lovely weather, spring weather, well, it's fall-ish feeling, but it happens to be spring, and it's not 20 degrees, it's only in the high 30s, low 40s. So for me, after all this winter, it's spring enough, and it's March 25th, 2007, and I'm here with ya on WGBB AM 1240 until midnight with Dave's Gone By, a mix of comedy, talk radio, music, interviews, sketches, all sorts of cool, fun stuff that we've been doing here since October of 2002. Welcome, everybody, to the Daverhood. And let's see, let's get the sponsors out of the way, not to belittle them, not to say that they aren't wonderful and important and great sponsors that we're proud to have, but just because we've got so much to do on this episode of Dave's Gone By. First of all, hey to Hewlett Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, 516-569-5577. They are the Copy Kings of Broadway, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Also, for everything you need to know about Broadway and off-Broadway shows. Now, the season is really going into high gear now. From now until early May, everything's just going to be opening up. All the stuff's going to open on Broadway in time to be considered for this year's Tony Awards. What are you going to take your family to? What shows are worth seeing? How do you find out about all of them, including all the off-Broadway stuff? Dozens and dozens of shows. How do you decide what to go see? Well, the first place to go, and well, the last place, too, if you think about it, is Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. PerformingArtsInsider.com is the place to go to find out about it, and also the special discount that Dave's Gone By listeners receive on subscriptions. Also, shout out to MortgagesRock.com. Andy Leibowitz and the boys in Hewlett at MortgagesRock.com. It's a place, yes, you can get a mortgage there. They're a licensed mortgage broker. But you can also learn how to do the whole mortgage thing and get other people mortgages. So it's paperwork. That's really all it is. You learn how to do stacks and stacks of paperwork. And the more of it you do, the more commission you get. And, of course, the folks at MortgagesRock.com will help you along every step of the way. They're real people. They're physically in an office. You can also reach them on the phone. And they've got a very, very explanatory website, MortgagesRock.com. And also shout out to Fancy Schmancy Balloons for all your party and decorating needs. Okay, now, who do we have on tonight's show? We've had such special guests over the years, including even in recent times. I mean, everyone from actresses like Daphne Rubin Vega to Julie Haggerty. We've had directors on the show. We've had a couple of playwrights, a lot of critics. We've also had some pretty well-known people in the music field, like former Monkey Peter Tork and Tom Paxton, Christine Lavin, Reckless Eric. There's just one after the other. There's really amazing, wonderful people to talk to. Well, we've got one more tonight, and I'm going to tell the short version how I came across this singer. Aside from knowing her name from doing small cabaret venues about 5-6 years ago and seeing it and wondering who she was, and then hearing that, oh gosh, she's so-and-so, and then figuring, well, that's the only reason she's getting a name for herself, and then hearing, no, she's really, really good, and within just a few years, going from sort of unknown cabaret status to being a real, fairly major cabaret headliner, Maud Maggart. Talked about her a whole bunch in the Little Big Time, the Dave's Gone By pre-show that we did from 10 to 11 tonight. So suffice to say, she's had, I wouldn't say a meteoric career, but it's a pretty fast rise in a very kind of niche field, and she's really making the most of it and has the talent to back that up. So I'm very, very happy to have Maud Maggart on tonight's episode of Dave's Gone By. Again, if you didn't hear the last hour, wait till you hear her sing, and I think we're going to have a great time hearing her talk as well. And going to save, pardon me, a little time towards the end of the program as well. I was going to devote the whole show, if I could, pretty much, to Maggart, because I've got her CD and a couple of other songs that she's done, and that would be enough for me just to make a wonderful hour. But then, this week, the news came down that an entertainment legend of sorts passed earlier in the week. Calvert DeForest, better known as the one and only Larry Bud Melman from the David Letterman Show. He died after a long illness. It was not a young man. In fact, he probably wasn't a young man in 1957, but special in his weird sort of talent and the fact that he was always himself, no matter what. And so I wanted to do a proper farewell to him because, A, loved his work for what it was, B, met him a couple of times, C, had dinner with him way, way back when, about 20 years ago, and D, am still waiting rather impatiently for CBS TV and The Letterman Show to do some kind of real acknowledgement on the program. And again, as I said in the last hour, a lot of that probably has to do with there being in repeats and preempted by March Madness basketball on CBS. I understand that, but still, you know, they could take an hour out and honor Larry Bud, because that would be the right thing to do. But the real right thing for me to do right now is get to commercials so we can talk to Maud Maggart and hear her music, which is what we're doing tonight on Dave's Gone By. For gosh sakes, do not go away. Okay, so your business proposal has been typed, proofread, photoshopped, and given a nice cover. Now, all you need is 20 spiral-bound copies plus 1,000 printings of your latest brochure. Your Xerox can't do it. Your mailroom can't do it. Hewlett Minuteman Press can do it all. Your one-stop printing shop, Minuteman, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Open 6 days a week, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. Family-owned Minuteman, their service can't be duplicated. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this very special Sunday, and there's the game that people play called 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, where we all know the game, but you can think of any actor or perhaps any world leader or person in the world, and if you go 6 degrees somewhere, they'll be related somehow to the actor and singer Kevin Bacon. Well, it's starting to be on this program something like 6 degrees of Christine Lavin, because we had Christine on the show about a year and a half ago, wonderful singer-songwriter and a terrific person. And she's very, very much into not only promoting her own music and her own songs, but going out there and really stumping for other musicians in the folk and also occasionally the cabaret idiom. And after she appeared on Dave's Gone By, Christine was kind enough to make me like a little sampler CD of all these different people that she was listening to at the time. And one of those people was Ray Jessel, and another was Maud Maggart, and I liked the CD, and I liked Maud stuff, and I had Ray Jessel on the program a few weeks later, and he was great. He's this older gentleman who just got into cabaret only a little while ago, and he's having the time of his life and singing these songs, and he also ended up knowing and admiring our guest tonight, Maud Maggart, because she sang with him and on several of his cabaret shows and on his CD that we played on the show. So finally I figured, you know what? This woman has such a special voice and she's so talented that we've got to keep the 6 degrees of Christine Lavin going. So ladies and gentlemen, that's a rather long intro to let you know just what a terrific and wonderful singer we have on Dave's Gone By, Maud Maggart. Hey, Maud.
Hi, Dave.
How you doing?
I'm good. I love that intro.
Thank you. I always get criticized that my intros go on longer than the actual interviews, but I promise this is going to be a tremendously long and boring interview to make up for the intro. But anyway, you're busy. You're a very busy person these days and have been for a couple of years now.
Yes.
And so how did it all really get rolling? I mean, you're in your 20s, I'm assuming?
Oh, no, I'm 32.
You're 32?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness gracious. So I assume you sort of rolled into cabaret stuff right out of college, but what were you doing before?
Well, right after college, I was sort of thinking about what I wanted to do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I started singing, I made the decision to try my hand at getting into cabaret when I was 25. And then a year after that, because I just turned 32, so yeah, it was about six, seven
years old. Were you working, doing like normal temp stuff or office stuff, or were you trying for something else right from the beginning?
I did a couple of little jobs, but I never got seriously into anything because nothing ever really interested me, frankly.
All right.
Which I mean, I say that because, you know, I know now that I was meant to be a singer. And so it makes sense that I was never pulled in very strongly in any other direction.
Were you a musical child? Did you take piano lessons? Did you take them willingly? That kind of thing.
I was a musical child, but I didn't take piano lessons. I taught myself how to play the guitar,
mm-hmm.
and there was always music going on around in the house where I grew up because both my parents are actors and singers.
You might as well mention that it's Brandon Maggart is your dad,
mm-hmm.
and I used to see his name on Norman Lear television shows, but it's true. And I think he did Broadway as well. I mean, I may know some of this stuff, but our audience doesn't, so why don't you fill in the gaps, as it were?
Well, my father has a really extensive theater Broadway history. He, in fact, met my mother in the show for which he was nominated for a Tony, which was Applause.
Oh, okay.
I think 1970.
Sorry, I couldn't hear that. 1970?
1970, I think,
uh-huh.
Was the year. But that's where he met my mother. He was nominated for Tony for playing Buzz, the playwright.
And your mom is?
My mom is Diane McAfee.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a June Taylor dancer and really a chorus girl in shows like Flora the Red Menace, which was Liza Minnelli's first show, and Superman, and I can't remember what else, but she was a chorus girl who landed the part of Eve Harrington in Applause.
Wow.
And but she did the out-of-town shows and then was replaced by Penny Fuller. And
were you itinerant then when your folks had to go do TV was all out on the coast, but when your mom had to be doing New York and Broadway and stuff, were you moved around a lot, or did you not see your parents for weeks at a time? How did that all work?
Well, my mom really just became a mother when I was born.
Ah, okay.
And so she really was. My father was the one who continued working as a performer. So he would go out of town to do things, and sometimes we would go and meet him. But I was able to. I wasn't, you know, itinerant or anything. We did stay home quite a bit, and then went to meet my father, which was fun. It was fun to be a kid and be around theater and. You know.
Do you remember meeting any famous people and either being really awed or meeting someone not really caring that much and then your parents told you, oh, you know, that was Ethel Merman or something like that?
I met Sammy Davis Jr. when I was very little, and all I can remember thinking was, he's really little too. You know, because I knew he was this famous person, but he was small, you know, and I thought that was remarkable. But that was when I was very young. I think under six.
So, it's interesting that it wasn't until 25 that you really realized, okay, music is a direction I want to go in. Because for a lot of people, it's really the teens. I mean, if you look at the whole American Idol thing, half the people there are 17 or 19. But what happened? You just began playing the guitar in folky clubs, and people started saying, you know, you should really take this somewhere?
No, I never played guitar for anyone. I mean, not professionally.
No, I meant going up
to the open
mic night.
So,
yeah.
No, actually, I was doing nothing professionally singing until I decided to get into cabaret. Throughout my teens and my brief college experience and the few years that followed, I had a paralyzing fear to try and become a singer because I was paralyzed by the fear that I might not be good. And that was just too much for me to think about. And then, you know, I got to be 25, and I thought, you know, it's this or, like, veterinary school, which I don't know if I can deal with. So I decided, you know what, bite the bullet. And if you fail, you fail. And I haven't, which is very good.
And worse, you can always combine them. If your voice was high enough, you could call the dogs with it. Without
I know.
It.
Yeah. Maud Maggart, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
I guess because of the Broadway background, that I think your voice has a quality that would work for both the pop and folk rock idiom, and yet you have really stuck, so far as I can see, to the standards and Broadway-ish sort of itinerary. Am I off on that, or is that...
No, you are right. But lately, like with the last show that I created for the Oak Room, I've expanded a little bit more. And in fact, I sing a Joan Baez song in my new show.
Uh-huh, which one?
So you're right on. I do feel that too. I like
which
I have
Baez?
A strong folk love song to a stranger.
Okay.
It's a later one that she wrote herself.
Cool. Well, yeah, well, she was writing her own stuff since Diamonds and Rust. But what have you, your record collection, either, let's say, 10 years ago or now, is it also mainly cast albums and you know, Susanna McCorkle and whatever, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., and Betty Buckley, or is it also everything from Joni Mitchell, Dylan, Nine Inch Nails, what have you?
Yes, everything. All those people are in my... I can't even say my record collection anymore. It's my iPod.
Your iPod?
All in there. All my life I had very eclectic musical tastes.
So what are like three things in your iPod shuffle at the moment?
Let's see. What did I just listen to? I was just listening to Aretha Franklin.
Okay. Old or new?
Old.
Yeah.
Baby, Baby, Baby. That's the song I was listening to.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to Bob Seger.
Okay.
And, and I listened to Alice Faye, Now It Can Be Told.
Alice Faye?
Yeah. So there you go. That's a pretty...
Yeah. Now, I guess also the follow-up question, or if you know Tom Stoppard's The Real Thing, you have 3 or 4 Desert Island Discs.
Oh, God, that is the toughest question.
Yes.
I think about this. Actually, that kind of question would keep me up at night because, man, Desert Island Discs.
Yeah.
That one is, that's tough.
Hmm. So let's say you have a famous or a favorite song of all time.
Favorite song of all time.
I'm trying. I'm working
well,
on it.
Well, I was just talking with Jonathan Schwartz, and we agreed that All the Things You Are is maybe the most perfect song.
Like, because
song for written.
Why do you feel that?
Because it expresses its meaning so eloquently, really beautifully, and just exactly. I mean, the words are simple, but so heartfelt, and just the construction of them and the way they line into the melody and the way the melody soars at the emotional height of the song.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you know what? There's something that is somewhat indescribable, as I think all good music has that quality, because I mean that's the reason why it's music, is because there aren't words to express what it is. You know, All the Things You Are is a song where wherever you mention it, I at least two people, you know, they sigh or they, oh, that song.
See, I do that to Boogie Oogie Oogie, so that's a little different for me there, but no, kidding. Now, when you did start to sing professionally in your mid-20s and stuff, you did have, at that point, you started getting some help and not quite doing it alone. So you were, would the phrase be fostered or mentored by Andrea Marcovici and Michael Feinstein? Is that correct?
Yes, both.
How did they help? What did they do?
They shared their knowledge with me,
mm-hmm,
about their craft. And they shared their music libraries with me. They recommended music to me or things that I should just listen to. And they introduced me to their audiences. They had me come up as a guest in their shows. Michael Feinstein did that for a whole month with me at Feinstein's at the Regency in 2001. Every night, every single show, he brought me up and introduced me and sang with me, and then I sang a song by myself.
Now, if you hadn't had that kind of push, and also the very... I wouldn't say overnight, but it was a pretty quick succession from being, you know, Maud Maggart at Don't Tell Mama Who's That, to Maud Maggart, oh, you know who's sister, so what, to being, oh, Maud Maggart at the Oak Room, cool, let's go see her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, within a couple of years. So, I mean, if that had not occurred, would you have tried the American Idol route or something
never.
That?
No, I mean, not me.
Because of the shyness again, or why?
I think part of the reason why I was drawn to cabaret is that it's such a, you're very much in control of what you're doing, and you're not one of a herd of cattle looking to do the same thing, you know, and mooing for that matter.
Did you act, do any actors stuff? Did you try out for... No interest in it?
Now I do. I think now I do.
Hmm.
But no, I never did before. But yeah, that's part of the reason why I like cabaret, is that it's, you can really create your own, you can create your own career. You know, you create your own job, you're your own boss, and you know, the master of all that you convey.
Well, cabaret, and I've talked about this with Barry Levitt, who was the head of the Max for a while, and some other cabaret people, and it does tend to be the cyclical thing. Like a few years back, it seemed to be on a real downswing because clubs were closing, and people didn't really know what was happening with it, and if that kind of live music venue was really going to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
Or sort of morph into something else. Has it taken an upswing because maybe so many regional theaters now have cabaret rooms and things like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that places recognize that, you know, a cabaret is so small that you can never, a business can't really think of it as a gigantic moneymaker. But it is something that, if people know that it's out there, it's a highly desirable way to spend your evening. You know what I mean? So there will always be people filling the rooms.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, as long as you have good entertainment in a room, I think that the allure of that kind of old world romance, you know, I mean, it's like sophisticated dating. It's to go to a cabaret with a date is to participate in the art of dating, I think, you know.
Okay. Well, okay. Since you brought that up, let's turn to the personal stuff. Are you you're not married, but are you dating? Are you?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, anybody seriously or special or what?
Yes.
Oh, and is there like an engagement thingy or not to that point?
No, not to that point.
Cool. We can leave that there. Okay, listen to me. No, I mean listen to me on Compact Disc, where bunches of past episodes of Dave's Gone By are yours to hear over and over again. Comedy sketches like Mel's a Poppin' and Handyman Yoni, visits with guests like Reckless Eric and Julie Haggerty, punchlines and politics in the News Gone By, all just $11 a disc, shipping included. Visit davesgoneby.org or call 516-295-1511 for me on CD.
Former shy girl Maud Maggart, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
We're talking with Maud Maggart, the lovely and incredibly talented and beautiful voiced cabaret singer. Were there points when there were songs that you really wanted to tackle, and you realized or thought or felt that your voice wouldn't be right for them?
Well, no, because I can pretty much tell immediately whether or not my voice is going to be right. So I never want to test. Yeah, I mean, I would like to be Janis Joplin sometimes, you know, but that's never going to
happen. You can blow your voice out in one day. You'll never sing again.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't even, look, I mean, when I'm, when I've been all by my lonesome, I've tried it, and it's awful. So, you know, I know where that territory is. So, you know, in that case, I am perfectly content to just enjoy the music and not try to participate in it. So, no, I mean, the music that I'm drawn to sing, I'm drawn to sing it because I feel like I have a shot at doing it some justice.
Can you think of, like, one or two of two moments when you were performing in a particular night or club or event or benefit that everything just sort of came together? It was one of those moments where, like, oh, this is why I'm doing this. I love this. Yeah. I will remember this moment forever kind of moment.
Oh, well, there's a feeling that happens where you feel the magic, the joyful magic of live performance, where your voice is coming together with some music, and there's like an energetic flow with the audience and yourself and the music and your musicians, and everything is like everybody feels like this is the best place they could ever be, and you feel it, and those are magic moments that come and go, you know.
Any recent ones that you could, like within the past year, let's say that?
Sure. Well, I mean, there have been certain performances at the Oak Room where I certainly felt that, at the Algonquin.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember one in particular. Oh, well, let's see. I do remember I was on a Prairie Home Companion twice.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. At Town Hall, and then after that I performed at the Hollywood Bowl in Hollywood.
Nice.
Yeah, and I I had the audacity to sing Over the Rainbow, if you can believe it, right after, and I had no idea he was going to do this, but Garrison Keillor, he was introducing me, and he gave this introduction, and he explained how Judy Garland had sat on that very stage in 1961, I think, and sung Over the Rainbow, and I thought, oh, God, what the hell? What am I going to do now? You know, it was like spelling out the audacity. But it turned out to not be that. It was, I remember the moment, you know. I didn't sit on the edge of the stage, but I did look out into the expanse of that bowl, and just the wind was blowing in the exact right direction. And that was quite memorable. I'll remember that forever. Hi, this is Maud Maggart. Oh, wait, I don't know what to say now.
What do you do when you get a cold and you still have to go out there and do it?
My father calls it Dr. Theater that comes to visit you, which does not mean like Dr. Feelgood.
Well, I wonder. Colonel Parker, anyone? No, no.
you're familiar with Dr. Theater. It's just, you know, you're...
The second you go on stage, something happens.
Yeah, something happens. I don't know if it's your adrenaline or just your drive to... I mean, there's nothing worse than being a singer and stepping out on stage and feeling like your instrument that you rely on is not going to come through for you. I mean, that leaves you completely naked and vulnerable to make a fool out of yourself. So Dr. Theater has served me very well. I had to, for the first time in my life, I had to cancel a show. Just recently I was in London, and I came down with laryngitis, and I couldn't even make a sound.
Yikes.
So that was, you know, what do you do? You can't do anything. So in that case, I canceled the show.
And how long did it take for you to get your voice back, not just back, but in singable condition?
Well, I just did a concert a couple of days ago, and it was pretty much all the way back. But that was the space of about a week and a half.
Now, going into a concert when you're just coming back from something like that, do you make compensations? Do you realize, like, a high note's going to be coming in, and do you either take it an octave lower or do a lot of arm motions so people don't notice that it's a little weak on the attack, or what?
Yeah, I hide behind the piano when the high note's coming. Pay no attention to that woman behind the piano.
You just flash the audience at that moment. Like the high C's coming. It's
right.
Like, boom, over goes the shirt, and then you're off to the next note. And
right.
Nobody notices. It's great.
No, well, sure. I mean, yeah, you have to compensate. And for me, it's interesting because I become much more I think the dramatic side comes out much more for me, more interpretive. When Andrea Markovich has had vocal trouble, she's done this thing that's, it's like a half a Sprecht thing, like, you know, half between talking and singing.
Oh.
And she's such a marvelous actress that it's like you don't even notice, you know, that that she's not technically singing every note. But that's, you know, that's when she's been very ill.
Yeah.
But sure, if I know a high note's coming and I know it's not going to come out, then of course, you know, I'll take it an octave lower or just change. You know, you have to. I mean, you don't want to go for it and then croak.
Well, no. Literally or figuratively, depending how sick you are. We are talking, by the way, with Maud Maggart, the singer. And I should mention, first of all, that you have a new CD out, which we've been playing from on the program. It's called Maud Maggart Live. And as it happened, just so happens to be an appropriate title because it's a live recording there. Where was the Algonquin Oak Room? All the songs were done there.
No, actually, about half the songs were recorded at the Algonquin and half the songs were recorded at the Gardenia in West Hollywood.
Oh, okay. So that's why it's got three different logos on the back of the CD.
Right. And there's one track that was recorded in New York at this past summer's River to River festival.
Cool. And just so people know, some of the songs on the disc include Coffee in the Morning, Kisses in the Night. You've got Deep in a Dream, Deep Purple, I Can't Get Started, I'm in the Mood for Love, My Funny Valentine. I mean, you're doing the majors here now. You know, not obscurities. You're taking on some songs that have real mileage on them.
Part of the fun of concentrating on music from the American Popular Songbook is it's really fun to create an evening or an album in which you can resurrect or unearth songs that some people have forgotten about or some people didn't even know exist because they're old, you know, they've been around for a long time. And unless it's a song like I'm in the Mood for Love or My Funny Valentine, you know, those songs, everybody knows.
And even some of those, people only know the first verse.
Right.
Or the first two lines,
right.
And it's like, oh, wait, there's two other verses in the bridge and a chorus. I didn't know those.
Right.
So, I mean,
yeah. And the fact remains that, you know, it's they're gorgeous songs. I mean, they're so popular and still alive, you know, beating in the hearts of so many people because they're beautiful. And so it serves both myself and the audience to you know, to give them something that they recognize and love, and that I recognize and love too. You know, so I like to create a mixture of songs that are somewhat unearthed, people might not know, but then also give them, you know, what they're waiting for.
Do you feel like your style has changed in the past 6 or 7 years from when you first started, and how?
Well, I think I'm more of a woman now.
Well. Hey, yeah.
I was a little boy before.
I doubt that highly, but okay, yeah.
No, I just...
For evidence, go to maudmaggart.com, by the way.
Right.
Should give that website out, and it's Maggart, maudmaggart.com.
Yes, pronounced beautifully by yourself, Dave, if I do say so.
Well, thank you so much. Actually, I'm stealing from Ray Jessel, because he's very clear
on
his CD
yes.
of the enunciation, because if you say Maggart, people will think, like, you know, the fly with a T on the end. And
I know.
So,
all my life I thought, oh, I'm destined to be fly larva. That's in my life.
Well, I assume you don't get that anymore.
Oh, you're kidding. Of course I do. Sure I do.
Oh dear.
Yes.
Now here, now forgive me, and again, if you really don't want to go there, we don't have to go there, but I do think people would be interested in the other aspect of your family, which is the sister.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Cool, okay, because, you know, you have a sister who was famous before you became famous.
Mm-hmm.
So she's older-ish or younger-ish or...
Yes, she's about 2.5 years younger than I am.
Younger, cool. And so she, I take it you shared record collections to some extent, but she certainly went in a different direction.
Yeah, well, my sister is Fiona Apple.
Right.
Great songwriter and singer. Yeah, we did. We enjoyed most of the same music, I have to say, growing up. And we went in different directions, but that's because she's been a songwriter all of her life, and a really good songwriter.
So she would do something like when she was 9 or 10 years old, and she'd play it for you, and you'd Would you give her comments? Would you just stare in awe at your younger sister? Or,
yeah,
or?
Just I'd stare in awe. I mean, you can't mess with, you know.
I assume she was taking
piano. I mean, from the time she was 6 years old, she was writing beautiful.
Oh, my gosh. And your voices are so different, because yours is this lovely, lilting high soprano. Well, not that high, but it's a very, what's angelic kind of soprano. And she goes more for this bass, heavy, resonant voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this dominatrix, come here sort of voice. Well, I don't know. Hey, you're the one dressed in sexy red on the back of your CD. I'm just trying to sell CDs here. But so when she became a, sort of an overnight-ish success, that did sort of happen for her, thanks to MTV and all that. Was there a strain, or was the family kind of used to it because they were in showbiz? Was there jealousy? Was there just, oh, wow, my sister's so famous? How did that all...
Well, I mean, it was a new experience for... I mean, my parents were in show business, but nobody, none of us had achieved the kind of, like, instant... massive fame and success that she did. So we were all so proud of her. But she was so young. I mean, she was 18.
Oh, wow.
When she, you know, became famous and started to go on tour. And, you know, she was young. And so I think we all were just, we just wanted her to be okay. I mean, that's rough on anybody to get,
to achieve that kind of
success and fame, but then when you're so young and very, you know, obviously sensitive and, you know, and vulnerable. And I'm a big sister, so I worried, but she handled it beautifully, you know.
Was she able, did she turn to the family? Did she call you from, especially when there was that period when she was going through a really tough public time. Or maybe it was only like a bad night. And then because the media was there, it became like a bad year. Mm-hmm. Whereas she might have, you know, 2 days later, she would have said, oh, God, what a bad night. Well, I'm fine. Or was it a bad time?
Well, I mean, there were, I guess, a few kind of, you know, difficult moments. But, yeah, sure, she turned to me. We're very close. Actually, we turn to each other a lot more now.
Cool.
And I think that, you know, my sister's an extremely resilient and strong person, and I think that part of that is feeling like she trusts herself to heal herself, you know, if she's been hurt or something like that, and to not immediately, you know, throw your arms out and somebody hold me and take care of me, you know, and love me. So, I mean, there is some of that. I mean, she's a human being, but...
but she's not throwing her arms out to drugs or something. She's throwing her arms out to people, which is what you're supposed to do.
Right.
You know, people in television and, you know, a beer at the end of the day or something. But what are some of the advice that she gave you and you gave her on career stuff?
Well, I don't think I ever gave her any advice on career stuff. I rarely give her advice. And actually...
You're the big sis.
Yeah, but... but I have a tremendous amount of faith in her own judgment. And, I mean, if she solicits advice from me, then I'm right there to give it. But, you know, the same thing with me. Like, part of the satisfaction of feeling like you can, like you're strong and you can find out the answers and take care of yourself is actually being put to the test and accomplishing it, you know. So, let's see. The only advice she ever gave me was I called her once and I was very excited about a good review that I had gotten. And she said, that's great. She said, you know, but I have to tell you that, fine, you know, enjoy it, but if you put a lot of stock in a good review, you're going to have to pay as much attention to a bad review if you get one.
Yeah.
That was extremely wise, you know.
Oh, yeah. I've been a theater critic for about 20 years, so I've heard that banding about, and it is actually true. It's one person's opinion, and if you say, oh, God, yes, they got it, they understand me, they love me, and then the next show, they have the total opposite review. If you put all those eggs in that basket, they're all going to smash.
Exactly. So that's the sort of take it with a grain of salt advice, which I now absolutely do.
What would you say is your greatest hurdle that you had to get over?
My greatest hurdle that I had to get over, that was, I suppose, feeling authoritative and like I deserve to be. You know, there sometimes there is a vast age difference between myself and my audience. I mean, it's usually a big mixture of people, people my age, people younger, and people certainly who are significantly older than I am.
Right.
Because
cabaret audience.
Well, I mean, I sing the music of a generation that that is older than I am,
right,
for the most part. So a big hurdle for me was feeling like they didn't, like they weren't looking at me like, who is this little kid thinking that she knows what her music is?
Hmm.
You know, and speaking with authority and reverence about the material that I was, since I didn't live through it, you know. I mean, I didn't, when I was a kid, I didn't turn on the radio and the hit song of the day was Smoke It's in Your Eyes. You know, I mean, that never happened to me. All I can do is imagine what it was like. And the music affects me, I'm certain, as deeply as it affected people who actually lived through it. But there is a generational gap. But it's one of those simple things that is very difficult to discover, you know. It's like the simplest truth that is at the end of a labyrinth of you know, self-doubt and second-guessing and stuff. But the simple truth is that it doesn't matter how old you are, where you come from, the songs that touch people's hearts are songs that express what it's like to be human. They express human emotion. And my grandmother went through probably everything that I've gone through emotionally.
Hmm.
And so just because there's a generational difference, there is such a strong thread connecting generations, because we all have experienced the same emotions. You know, the circumstances may have been different, but, you know, there it is right there. And that, to me, was revelatory, to realize that that's how I cannot feel like a stupid little kid. I'm the same as they are.
Well, you're very, very far from a stupid little kid.
Thank you.
That should be the blurb on your next album.
Far from a stupid kid?
Yeah, very far from a stupid kid. And you can put all your eggs in that basket, absolutely.
That's right. I will put all my eggs in that basket.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been great, great fun and a delight to talk to Maud Maggart. Go get her CD, Maud Maggart Live. Plus, she has a couple of others. I assume they're all available at your website, maudmaggart.com.
Yes, I think they are now, and maudmaggart.com and amazon.com.
Cool. And the usual, typical final question is, A, what are your upcoming plans for the next couple of weeks, I mean, as far as doing stuff in New York, and B, some of the longer-range plans as far as your next CD or you know, next tour or something like that?
Well, I'm going to be at the 92nd Street Y in June, I think June 2nd to 4th, with Steve Ross. I'm going to be in a show about Noel Coward.
Oh, Steve Ross is so great.
I love Steve Ross, yeah. So I'll be there then. And, oh, on May 30th, I'm doing an in-store performance at Barnes & Noble at Lincoln Center.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And so what about...
I'll be there signing the CD and performing.
Signing the CD or pretty much any CD that people
yes.
want to pick up. So,
right.
Well, of yours. And don't go there and buy a 9-inch Nails CD and expect Moa to sign it.
hey, I'll sign it.
Well, that's nice of you.
Reznor might get angry at me, but, you know.
Sign it, Trent. But and what about more long-range-ish? Just more of the same?
No, I mean, yeah, I'll always perform songs from the American Popular Songbook, but, you know, I like the way life changes and become interested in new things, so who knows? But I will be back at the Okrum at the Algonquin next year.
Uh-huh.
So it's over a year that we have to wait, but for 6 weeks, beginning April 1st.
April 1st of 2008.
Eight.
Wow. Now, that's the great thing about, you know, being where you are already in your career. You're booking for a year or so in advance at a place like the Oak Room. That's
mm-hmm.
neat. So much, many, many years of continued success and really lovely, lovely music. And absolutely delightful talking to you, Maud Maggart. Thanks so much for being in the neighborhood.
Thank you, Dave.
just a simple thing. I've one ambition, to have the right to bring you your coffee in the morning and kisses in the night. It's my desire to do as I am told, to have what you require and never have it cold, dear. From coffee in the morning to kisses in the night. Though wedding bells sound sad and dirty, though wedding ties may spoil the fun, without the helping hand of clergy, oh, I'm afraid it can't be done. It isn't formal, but with a wedding ring, it's natural and normal to bring you everything, dear. From coffee in the morning to kisses in the night.
The best Broadway magazine just got better. More listings, more contact numbers, more inside information in Performing Arts Insider. And not just Broadway, off-Broadway, off-off, dance, cabaret, opera. As one dramaturg put it, Performing Arts Insider is a gold mine of information for the theater professional. 21 times a year at your doorstep, the whole world of theater, with 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. Visit PerformingArtsInsider.com or call 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Performing Arts Insider. It's Broadway the best way. Yes, Broadway the best way. Performing Arts Insider. And remember, 10% off all subscriptions for Dave's Gone By listeners. And talk about our other sponsors and do some wrap-ups in a little bit. But I'm glad I saved a little time in this episode after that wonderful time we've just had with Maude Maggart to talk about something a little bit sadder. We've had such a delightful time with her, and she's so young and fresh and talented, and it's great to hear her music. So, got to bring the mood down just a little bit, because we did lose someone pretty special in the entertainment field in a very different way. I mean, here's Maude. She's beautiful. She's talented. She's this wonderful voice. I mean, her career, there are so many things that she can trade on. I'm not sure if she can act. We'll probably find that out in the next few years. But there's someone who had no discernible talent at all. He had personality of a sort. He had himself and his particular weird way and oddball and lovable way of just being who he was. A fellow named Calvert DeForest, who was this little man who had some mild ambitions, like so many people do. I mean, I'm lucky enough to be in the arts in a small way. I've written plays. I've had a couple of them done. I went to school for film and TV and radio and things like that. I get to be on the radio, even on a small station like this, 1,000 Water on Long Island, or a freeform station out in Stony Brook. So I get to fulfill that ambition in a semi-professional and occasionally a professional way. But there are lots of people who get it out in other ways. They paint on the weekends. You know, they write songs, they write novels that never get published, you know, or they play in a band on the weekend just in a garage, or they appear in amateur and community theater. And that's how they're not especially the most talented or the luckiest people to get further in their career. but they do what they want to because that's an outlet of themselves that needs to be expressed. Well, there was this little old, well, it wasn't that old back then, but there was this little very nondescript middle-aged man working just a job, and wanted to do a little bit more than that. So he started to do some community theater, did it for years, and then he started to, I guess he subscribed to Backstage, and showed up to do student films, because people, I mean, when I was going to NYU 20 years ago, Columbia and NYU, all these places, the one place you knew you could get work, unpaid, certainly, and you got free food usually, and sometimes maybe a little money for transportation. But if you appeared in a student film, eventually all these kids were running around with cameras for these little films that most of them went nowhere. But it was an opportunity to network and work and be there. And maybe if you hooked up with the right crew or the right director, something else would happen that would lead to other things. Well, this little egg-shaped, strange man did that. He appeared in a couple of student films. And was noticed, not necessarily for being good, but for being himself. And it turned out, I think, one student film he was in ended up being by people who went on to write for or be connected with the nascent David Letterman program. Back when they were starting it out in 1981 or 1982, actually, it was February 1st, 1982 was the very first episode of the David Letterman show in daytime. Because it was a daytime show before it caught on at night. And the first face that people saw when Letterman went on was not David Letterman's, was not Paul Schaefer's, it was not the announcer, I'm sorry, Bill Wendell, I think was the announcer at that point, or Chris Elliott, no. It was Calvert DeForest, or his, as he was called from the very beginning, Larry Bud Melman. And he was just there to be a jokey kind of character, to look at this weird little very pale man with almost a chicken-like face with a black-rimmed glasses being himself, reading off of cue cards with, again, no discernible talent or facility for it. And yet, because he didn't have that, and because he was so cute in his odd way, people gravitated towards that. They laughed at him, but at the same time as laughing at him, they were laughing with him. And that was kind of the special irony to the humor that Letterman and his crew gave American television and American humor. That's what made the Letterman show a cult and made it different and special in those first few years. It was a new slant on making fun of and at the same time falling in love with what you were making fun of. So it wasn't necessarily nasty, although Letterman could be at times. He could be snarky, but it was also the sense of, wow, he's weird and strange. And yet, there's something amazing about him. And, of course, Howard Stern does that, too, with people like Beetlejuice and Hank the Angry Drunken Dwarf. But Melman became this special, lovable cult figure, and he'd appear at the end of the programs and do these little ads for Toast on a Stick or Drive a Melman Bus. And, of course, what really rocketed him to cult stardom in the years well before YouTube or anything like that. I mean, VCRs were out. But it wasn't as if everybody had constant access to everything that appeared on television the night before. He did one segment where he was asked to greet people, I think at the Port Authority bus station, and hand them, like, special gifts. One time he did it with hot towels, but that first time he did it, we all remember this, and if you've never seen it, you can find it on YouTube, where Larry goes, he greets these people coming off the bus. They don't know who he is. They're kind of disoriented. Here's this little strange egg-shaped man with a show that not many people necessarily were watching at that point, and telling them, you know, welcoming them, giving them a little spiel from David, asking them questions, and not even knowing at that point how to hold a microphone so that when you're talking, the microphone is always in front of your mouth, and when your person you're interviewing is talking, you keep the microphone in front of their mouths for everything they're saying, or else you can't really hear them. He did not know this. So halfway through when he was speaking or they were speaking, he would pull the mic away back to the other place. So half the conversations were cut off. It was so natural and beautiful and unplanned and so Larry that made him deservedly a star, and they started using him in sketches, and then dressing him up as Roy Orbison, and doing all sorts of wonderful things, but sending him to Tierra del Fuego, which, you know, he was all into, except when he was there for a week. And they called him, and he's like, Dave, I just want to go home. I'm not happy. It was real. That was the beautiful thing. It was funny because it was just so real. And Larry Bud Melman, and then when Letterman left to go from NBC to CBS, you know, he jumped for the money. He had to take, of course, Larry with him, but he couldn't take the name, even though he and his writers thought of it. NBC said, no. They were being very bitchy about it. The name Larry Bud Melman is our intellectual comic property. If you want to take Calvert to Forest, fine, but the idea of a Larry Bud Melman stays with us. So they brought Calvert DeForest with them to CBS, and he was himself. He was still Calvert DeForest. That's what he was to begin with anyway. And he stayed with them until he got a bit older, and apparently the last time he appeared was in 2002 or something for his 81st birthday. And then he just got a little old and not up to it anymore. So, you know, first of all, I want to say farewell to Larry Bud Melman, Calvert DeForest, who died on Monday, March 19th, 2007. He was 85 years old. He'd been ill for a while, and kind of appropriate that we're saying goodbye on this station, WGBB, because he apparently died in a hospital in Babylon, Long Island. And again, by the way, this is WGBB Freeport, AM 1240. Wanted to get that in there. And Melman was working as a file clerk in a drug rehab clinic when he was, quote-unquote, discovered from the NYU student film. And that is how I met him back in my NYU student days. I was going to be making this movie towards when I was graduating, like the last year there as an undergraduate in film and television. I wanted to make this 15, 20-minute comedy movie called Foreskin Field. You don't even want to know what it was about. And it never got made for various reasons that I do not want to get into, and I've never quite forgiven NYU for. But I thought, my gosh, wouldn't it be amazing to have him in it somehow? So I had seen that he was coming to NYU now and again to be in other student films and to deal with the folks that had used him in the film. And I saw him. I ran after him. I knew he was in the building. Ran down the street. Talked to him. And he was absolutely nice, sweet, shy, kind. Convinced him to you know, at least talk to me about the film. Ended up having him over for dinner when I was living in New York, sharing an apartment with a friend of mine at that time. And true to form, he comes over and he brings the cake. You know, the little cake tied with string, which was just so sweet. And he was as even then himself. And of course, we grilled him. We did what you had to do with a star like that in your presence. We asked him about his life and how he was working, what it was like to be on the Letterman show. What was David really like? And he's a nice man, but, you know, off the show, he's kind of to himself. And about the band, it was kind of funny that he answered, oh, they're all hopheads. That was the phrase he used, so you knew he was from the old school. Basically, he meant that they were all either drunk or half the time, either when they were on or off the show. They're nice, but, oh, they're all hopheads. But he didn't really dish. He didn't say really bad things about anybody. And he felt that he was very lucky to be doing what he was doing. He just, and he understood that people were laughing, but he never felt particularly laughed at for the most part. He just knew that he was making people happy, and that was fine for him. Got the sense that he was gay and that he had sort of a partner of some sort, but he didn't really go there. I guess he was also from the old school on that. And hey, that was fine for him as well. But I just remember having a really, really nice time with him, and he never did appear in my movie, because I wanted him to play a baby. He wasn't very happy with the scene or with where that film I was going to make was going. So he left a message on my machine one time that I wish I would still have. And said, Dave, I just don't think I ought to really do this. Because this is also when his name was really starting to be something, and he was starting to get these other gigs just for being Larry Bud Melman. But alas, did not get Larry in my film, but I was very happy to have him at least briefly in my life and to see him on TV for all those years. David Letterman said on the WNBC Letterman website, quote, everyone always wondered if Calvert was an actor playing a character, but in reality he was just himself, a genuine, modest, and nice man. To our staff and to our viewers, he was a beloved and valued part of our show, and we will miss him. Well, yes, I mean, I wish, it, again, we're a little more specific about Larry, that particular quote, and as I said in the pre-show to this week's Dave's Gone By at in the 10 o'clock hour, my one disgruntlement at this particular moment is that the Letterman Show and CBS have not gone ahead and had either the opportunity or I hope they haven't had the opportunity, because if they have and they've declined to do a special show in honor of Larry Bud, well, what the heck are they waiting for? I mean, when Letterman was first on the rise, when he moved to late night and got really big with the college students, and then that became the groundswell that made him the most popular entertainer in late night, it was because of him. It was because of his relationship in the band with Paul, and it was because of writers like Chris Elliott and his personality, and it was because of Larry Bud. Larry Bud was part of that very first, well, quadrat, not a triad, but those people made it what it was. They were the visual component of Letterman, along with the other writers, Meryl Larko, those kinds of people. And so to have Larry Bud Melman's death last Monday, almost a week ago, go essentially unacknowledged on the TV program for various reasons, it's just like there's not closure yet. I mean, I want to have at least a segment or a full show honoring his weird particular legacy. And I think that's only rightful. Now, again, you can say the reason they didn't do it was one day last week they were in reruns, and then the one live show, or I should say the new show that they did, I don't think they had gotten the news yet. Like, it had come out on Tuesday night that he had died, so the Tuesday show, they didn't really have it. So it was something like that, and then the next episode was a rerun, and then Thursday and Friday was March Madness, the basketball that CBS has been showing endlessly, preempting everything all day long. It's worse than the Watergate hearings. So I'm assuming that Letterman has not had the chance to do the Melman Remembrance Show. I am hoping and praying that he will make that right and do that this week, if not Monday. I don't know if that's maybe a repeat day for Late Show with David Letterman, or Tuesday then, assuming he's not on vacation this week or something, or there's more basketball being played at midnight. I am hoping that he will go back and show that microphone scene from those early days, that the very first appearance of Larry Bud, some of the Drive a Millman bus thing, some of the sketches that he did, some of the weird characters that they got him up as. So please, 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 if anybody's listening from CBS, from the Letterman camp, this is not a weird request. This is not something that this is something that should have occurred to you on Tuesday or Wednesday morning as soon as you heard the news. Oh my gosh, let's do the right thing by Larry and revel in his memory, and not just wait until your primetime special half a year from now to do 5 minutes in his honor. You know, do it right, folks. Anyway, it is 12:10 a.m. We're in Dave's Gone By overtime here on WGBB. Got to do a little commercial, and then I'll be back to wrap up the program. Keep it here. Don't go away. I know you got to go to sleep. I know you got work tomorrow, but I'll talk you into sleep gently. It'll be nice. It'll be fun. So don't go away just yet. Well, rockin' my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, rockin' my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, rockin' my mortgage in the bosom of Abraham, mortgagesrock.com. God has a plan for you, giving your friends and family mortgage loans. Learn how at mortgagesrock.com. Fully licensed in New York State and in heaven. They'll teach you the ropes so you can climb Jacob's ladder to high, high, high commissions. Rockin' my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Rockin' my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Rockin' my mortgage, mortgagesrock.com. Everybody point and click. Everybody point and click to mortgagesrock.com. Remember, it is the place where they will tell you how to help other people get mortgage loans and other kinds of financing. So definitely check them out. Also, please check out our other sponsors, Performing Arts Insider Theater, magazine. It's everything you need to know about Broadway, off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, cabaret, which, of course, we've talked about a lot tonight, and also dance and performance art and all the big awards that are coming up, the Drama Desk, the Outer Critics Circle, the Tony Awards. Everything is in this magazine, and everybody who listens to Dave's Gone By gets 10% off if you want to subscribe. So, by all means, do that. Go to PerformingArtsInsider.com to find out more. And do go to Hewlett Minuteman Press for all your copying and printing and binding needs. If you need to put your company logo on a t-shirt or a mug, if you want to put your letterhead or your thing on pens and pencils and stuff, that's the place to go. If you've got a company report to do and you need 30 copies spiral bound, this is the place to go. If you just need 10,000 copies of a flyer, this is the place to go. Hewlett Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, next to the new Lohmann's Shoe Store, and across the street from the long-term old Lohmann's in Hewlett on Broadway. And remember, 10% off every copy job that you've got if you mention Dave sent you from Dave's Gone By, because they are part of the neighborhood. Also, want to give a shout out to Fancy Schmancy Balloons, 516-797-3229 for all your party and decorating needs. Okay, got some thank yous. Want to first of all do a shout out to Nihal and Iskandar and Pamuk, and also a hey to Gregoire. Had a very, very fun day going to the beach today and went to some marvelous restaurants out in Long Beach. Terrific. Excuse me, this is not a commercial. I'm just saying, we had a delicious lunch at a place called Yummy Yummy over there. Just all the sushi you can eat for $22. And believe me, I ate a lot of it. And then over to a crepe place. So fabulous day. Beautiful time at the beach. And a shout out to them. I want to thank also my beloved wife, Joyce. Mwah, mwah. You know, our anniversary is coming up this week on Thursday, 9 years since we were married, and man, it feels like it's only been 9 years. No, I kid. I love you, hon. Please, you know, don't change the locks before I get home. And let's see, want to give a shout out, of course, and a thank you to Maud Maggart, our wonderful, lovely guest. Go to maudmaggart.com, MAGGART.com, to find out about her CDs and to where she's playing, both on the left coast and on this one in the months ahead. Thank you also to Dan Fortune at the Miller Wright publicity firm for helping set up that interview. A couple of reminders before we give you gospel. You can listen to a vintage Dave's Gone By episode twice a week, two different episodes, on Live365.com. It's Thursday nights and Saturday nights at 11, courtesy of DFSXRadio.com. Now, that's a channel on Live 365. And believe me, Live 365 is facing some heavy times now because of a change in the way they're doing fees for streaming music on the Internet. And it's going to be a big thing that could shut down a lot of Internet radio. So listen now, while you still can, to Dave's Gone By on Live 365. Go to davesgoneby.org for the links. For every Thursday and Saturday night at 11, you can hear an older show. And we have 25 older shows that you can listen to anytime, 24/7, on theaterpod.com, theaterpod.com. They're there, they're free, you can stream them, you can, if there's a boring part, not that there's ever a boring part on this program, but you can go forward or you can listen to things over anytime, 25 shows on theaterpod.com. And then I want to remind you that on Friday morning, early morning, 3 o'clock until 6:30 a.m. on 90.1 WUSB-FM out in Stony Brook, Jeff Goodman and I, assuming Jeff is awake, will get out to Stony Brook to do our big time show. It's 3.5 hours of talk radio, your phone calls, lots of fun, very free form. We have a great time, and it's building a definite audience, and it'll be radiothon. So there'll be a way, I think, for you to bid on some cool station gifts and special things that you can get. Anyway, that's Friday, March 30th, Jeff and me doing the big time on WUSB. All the information at davesgoneby.org. Okay, gotta get out of here, but I want to remind you also that April 1st, next week, my guest in the Daverhood will be, ladies and gentlemen, Joe Franklin. What better? It'll be April Fool's Day. It's also going to be the day before the day before Passover, and it's Palm Sunday. Joe Franklin, one of the great legends of broadcasting from WOR, the TV show, the radio show. Now he's on Bloomberg. Oh, my gosh. I'm unbelievably excited about that. So we will be back next Sunday, April 1st, 2007, with a 214th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night, my friends, my good, wonderful friends from here across the universe, across the planet, ladies and gentlemen, brought to you by Stride's Matzah for the Unleavened Experience. I realize that's Billy Crystal more than Joe Franklin talking to you, and yet I meld into Joe, he melds into Billy, Matty meld into me. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a wonderful kind of thing on this fine program, so I want to wish you all, please, good luck, good night, good morning, good Samaritan, gone fishing, gone sailing, gonorrhea, gone with the wind, gone crazy, and gone by.
I dim all the lights, and I sink in my chair. The smoke from my cigarette climbs through the air. The walls of my room fade away in the blue when I'm deep in a dream of you. The smoke makes a stairway for you to descend. You come to my arms, may this bliss never end, for we love anew, just as we used to do, when I'm deep in a dream of you. Then from the ceiling, sweet music comes stealing, we glide through a lover's refrain. You're so appealing that soon I'm revealing my love for you over again. My cigarette burns me, I wake with a start. Hand isn't hurt, but there's pain in my